Every Woman is a womanish show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As 50% of the world's population and 52% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The opinions and views expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the KKFI board, staff, volunteers, or sponsors of KKFI and the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated. And fair warning, there's going to be some good opinions today. Sharon?
Oh, is it my turn? I just said, we were just involved in this lively discussion, so much so that Amy couldn't turn on the mics hardly, and I said, I don't know if it's got to be unnatural to have a co-host who's going to disagree with her co-host. And so we are going to have some lively discussion, and we, of course, want the listeners to join in with us, too. We have a limited amount of time because our esteemed guest, Esther Holzendorf, who many people who listen to this show may have heard her before on the show, has to leave at 3:30, so we're going to have to make it quick. Esther, welcome to Every Woman again.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
And first, I want you to tell about an action that you're taking part in on Tuesday.
Yes, and we're very excited about it. We will be leaving the Metropolitan Baptist Church, going to Jefferson City, and the purpose is to meet with legislators and other individuals about some of the bills that we are very concerned about, the minimum wage, Medicaid expansion, the long-term sentencing, gun proliferation, expungement of records. You know, when people get out of prison, they've still got that felony on them. So we have a bill that we want passed into law that would expunge their records. Also, we have an inmate certification bill that would any of the incarcerated citizens that have worked in any of the trades, when they get out now, they get a certificate. But we want a law passed saying that they can actually be certified and bonded so that they can get decent wages. We're planning on assembling at 6:30, leaving promptly at 7 o'clock a.m. on Tuesday morning, May the 6th. There will probably be a civil action take place. There, enough nonsense has taken place. There comes a time, Sharon, when folk have to stop cooperating with an unjust system. So there are probably 3 busloads of people leaving Kansas City, and I don't know how many vans. There will be people coming from all over the state of Missouri. This is being led by the clergy. We will be out front on the point, and because this has to do with equal justice, it has to do with equal treatment under the law, and it has to do with just doing the right thing. Poor people have been stepped on, pushed down, taken advantage of, and these are the people that we represent, really. And so we have to step up and take responsibility for saying to the legislators, we want common sense legislation.
And if someone wanted to join in that, how would they get a hold of you to get aboard a bus?
They could call me 816-965-8137.
Give that number again.
Okay, 816-965-8137.
To call Esther Holzendorf to take part in what sounds like could be another historic moment.
Yes, it's very much like the old civil rights days. You know, Sharon, sometimes we look at things and we wonder, do we have to go back in time and maybe do it again? And I think this is it. Mm-hmm. That's where we are.
Well, thank you for coming on and telling us about that, and I so wish I might try to arrange my schedule so that I could be there and do that, too. But I asked you on the air because there's been a lot of discussion, it's all you're hearing today, about this 80-year-old rich white man who stated a private opinion that should surprise no one because of the era he grew up in at the height of blatant racial discrimination. And so he not only is he a fool, but he's an old fool. And that is witnessed by the fact that he has a 31-year-old, air quote, personal assistant that he gives Ferraris and penthouses and jewelry to. And so they're making out a big deal, and I'm listening to this, and it suddenly strikes me, well, you know, so he said this in a private conversation, and they can strip him of his ball team and take away personal property and fine him for a private conversation he had. Not only does that sound like thought police and pretty dangerous, it sounds like women are fair game. Because had his girlfriend said, or had he said to his girlfriend, I don't want you hanging out with those bitches, I don't want you bringing those bitches to the ball game with you, the world would not have batted an eye. Okay. Yeah. All right. We're opening this up to Esther first and then Amy, because Amy is going to be a dissenter, she said. Esther and I may be on the same page. We're not sure.
You're going to be slightly on the same page with me. I mean, I'm not going to be like a defender of this behavior. No. Oh, and we also have a call-in number because this is going to be an opinion show, and your opinion does matter on this show. So you can call us at 816-931-5534 and join the fray.
Yes, this is one of those hot topics, I guess.
Yeah.
And everybody is talking about this old man that made these statements, and as well they should. I mean, people should be upset about that.
Yeah.
The things he said is just really inexcusable. But you know what, Sharon? I have a problem with some of this stuff. What he said is offensive, and people should be upset about it. And there are some well-known athletes that came out speaking out about it. But I don't hear them speaking out about all this music. I was at a stoplight the other day, and it was a car pulled up beside me. The windows were down because it's a fairly nice day. The words that was coming out of that car, I found to be so offensive, I just let my windows up. I mean, the bitches, and I mean, just horrible thing. So what I don't understand is if people are going to get upset with this 80-year-old white man who was born and raised in a country where that kind of stuff was allowed when he was coming up. I mean, I'm laughing about it, but it's not funny, ha 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 funny, but it's just how I think it's really hypocritical for us to jump on this 80-year-old white man who, this is what he's used to doing. I mean, I'm not saying it's right. It's not right. But what about us people that go out and spend money, buy these, they don't call them records anymore, tapes or whatever it is, spend all this money with all these corporations, buying all these high-priced tennis shoes and things from corporations that could care less about you, your kids, your grandkids, your dog, your cat. They don't care anything, but you don't think a thing about spending $200 for a pair of shoes. And they're probably calling you worse than that in their corporate boardrooms because you'll never know because you're not on the board, never will be. So I just have a problem with the hypocrisy. I have a real problem with that.
Yeah, and my problem is that, you know, women are fair game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's okay to beat up a woman.
Yeah.
It's okay to curse a woman.
Yeah.
It's okay to make jokes about
exactly.
women.
Yeah.
It's okay to not pay women equally.
Yeah.
If you are a man who kills your wife, the national statistics say you'll spend 5 to 7 years in prison, and then when you get out, you can have custody of your children. And then if you're a woman and you kill your husband, it's like, oh, my God.
Oh, you don't have to kill him. Just shoot a gun in his area.
Yeah.
Yeah, look at Melissa.
Shoot a gun in
yeah.
his area.
And
that's
you just
right.
go, you
did
just
she get life?
Stand the ground. Something like that. Stand the ground doesn't apply
yeah,
in her
they,
case.
Did they finish the retrial? Because they were retrying her and giving her... wanting to give her 60 years. They'd already given her 20 or something
20
like
or
that.
Something? Okay. The last I heard is they were
but
talking about a retrial.
But it's the same prosecutor that prosecuted George Zimmerman.
So talk about
air
racist.
Air quotes on prosecuted.
Mm-hmm. But
talk about racist. Now, there's
now,
something
now,
that's racist.
But did you hear anybody? I haven't heard all of these athletes,
exactly.
all of these folks standing up hooping and hollering about Melissa. I think her name was Melissa. The state of Florida, wherever she is. I haven't heard all of this outcry.
No.
But this 80-year-old man, oh boy, let's off with his head.
You know what it's about? It's about the money. They're trying to save their imitation, their image.
And can you believe that NAACP gave this guy an award and was getting ready to give him the image?
When it was known that he's discriminated against tenants and property and that his wife portrayed herself as a health inspector.
Yes.
And they were going to give him an award.
The Image Award or whatever they called it.
Well, you know, I do think that we should be holding all these other people to a wonderful standard, but that doesn't mean that this guy gets a pass on this issue.
No.
And furthermore, the idea that, an 80-year-old white man would just, because he was raised that way. I mean, my grandma worked in a diner where she wasn't allowed to let black people sit at the counter.
Yeah.
And she said that was the worst thing that she ever had to do in her life, when somebody who could hardly stand up would come in there and she couldn't even offer them a seat.
Yeah.
She said it was horrible.
Yeah.
And I've never heard that kind of language out of her. She was in that generation. She was in the heart of it, in the middle of those laws, as a white person of that generation that does not use language like that, and you don't get a generational pass. That's still what a bad person, how a bad person behaves.
No, we're not talking about a generational pass. What we're saying is, where is the outrage about these other... Where is the outrage? That's where the hypocrisy is.
Yeah.
The outrage is because the NBA believes that their image is now tarnished, when in reality, all of their white team owners, and I don't know how many of them are white team owners, may be in the very same social strata or non-conscious strata that this 80-year-old man is in.
He's not the only one. He's just the one that got caught.
Exactly.
No, it's not a whole generation of people. It's like anything else. People make decisions. And this man made a decision about, I guess his money or whatever tells him he's untouchable. But, you know, like my generation, and I understand what this young lady is saying about, because my grandmother and them were in that generation where they couldn't sit down at the table. But we also have to remember the 14, 15, 16, 12, 13-year-olds that sat down at lunch counters and went to jail and integrated the public eating places. So
we do have a caller on the line. Caller, you are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Sharon. I'm calling from Kansas City.
Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I just tuned in and kind of caught the tail end of the comment about where's the outrage about the other entities that are discriminating, and agree with that. But also agree with the comments the young lady just made, is that we should be outraged a bit about that, but we can't give this guy a pass.
Exactly.
And the outrage starts somewhere. If it starts with him, hallelujah. It's just like all of the sex scandals going on right now. And finally, after forever and a day, when women weren't safe in colleges, weren't safe in the military, something is being done, because we started somewhere. Start with him, go to the next one, gather people together, organize to get the outcry about the other entities, but it has to start somewhere. And no, he doesn't get a pass, and nor should the rest of them.
And I certainly agree with you, Sharon, on that, but I have to stand on the fact that we have so many of these athletes that came out and spoke out against this man, but I don't hear them speaking out against these musicians, if that's what you want to call them, these rappers or whoever, who have no problem getting on stage calling women bitches and whores and all of this other stuff. And not only do they do that, they make millions of dollars for these corporations who have bought and sold them, and now they are taking advantage of young people and the families that they should be helping are being torn apart, and all of this obscenity that's directed strictly against women. I want to know let's get angry with this 80-year-old man. Okay, he's offensive. But what about these youngsters who are calling these women, me included, a bunch of bitches and all this other stuff? Where's the outrage for that? That's my whole thing right now, Sharon, is why the hypocrisy?
I get that, but you know what? It is a world of hypocrisy, and it stops when you speak up, when I speak up, when we just keep on talking until we get somebody else speaking up. Just like now, we have all of these stars on a commercial, on a public service broadcast saying, when no means no. If she tells you no, beyond that, it's rape. This mm-hmm. is groundbreaking. Mm-hmm. How long did it take? Yeah. This is 2014. It's ridiculous that it's taken this long. But praise God, it has finally happened, and it's because there was one incident, then one incident, then one incident, and people kept talking about it. So, yeah, we've all got to keep talking about it. Never mind the hypocrisy. Just keep talking about it.
Well, Sharon, thank you for calling in and speaking out about it today on our show.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day.
I saw a Facebook cartoon, sort of, or maybe it was just a statement, that this woman said she would believe feminism had succeeded when they were teaching men not to rape instead of teaching mm-hmm. women how not to get raped.
Not to get raped, right. Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
And you know, I've often said on this show, where is the outrage? Why are men mm-hmm. not speaking to other mm-hmm. men? Why are men mm-hmm. not standing up and saying, mm-hmm. you can't do that? But there's mm-hmm. just, like, mm-hmm. white noise when mm-hmm. men, it's like men have some sort of a, I wonder if it isn't because maybe they, too, have thought about rape or have had thoughts of, you know, I don't know what it is, but men just are not very vocal.
I think it has to do with this male-dominated society. The perception is that men have all power, and so women get taught how to, don't wear your dress too short, you know, don't be here at a certain time, or don't wear this makeup, or don't do that, and how not to get raped. You hear that all the time. It's almost like it's on a billboard. It's almost right. like it's an advertisement. Right. But how many times do you hear that same message to young men? It doesn't matter what a woman has on. You do not have a right to touch her. And if she says no, it means no.
Right. We do have another caller on the air. You are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, greetings from San Francisco. I'm David.
Oh, hi, David.
Hi, David.
Yeah, how are you? You know, I was interested in this from the angle of, in contract law, they have what are called morality clauses. So mm-hmm. most of the famous movie stars and sports stars and, you know, various people in the celebrity field have what are called morality clauses, so that if you go out and, you know, get caught up in a crime or, you know, have a vicious car wreck or beat someone, your contract can be ended, you know, right on a dime. And it's interesting that this billionaire has probably got 500 contracts that are riding on him just with his stadiums, not, you know, much less with his other properties. And the idea that every one of those vendors, all the hot dog vendors, all the beer truck drivers, all of the people that sell, you know, jerseys and all sorts of odds and ends at the game, if he screws up, their lives, their incomes are all lost because of his screw up. So it would make sense that every one of them should be demanding a rider on their contracts, basically a morality clause that no bigots allowed here.
That's a pretty good point. Mm-hmm. That's very interesting.
Yeah, very.
And it's kind of the old, you know, the Occupy angle on it too. But it it seems to me that, it's funny, I was listening to one of the other shows earlier today. 100 years ago, you know, was the start of World War One, and the guy that got killed, the Archduke Ferdinand, mm-hmm. he was actually a horrible guy. This guy was a gambler and a drunk and a rapist, and he was abusing people, but the fact that he was an Archduke gave him immunity, very similar to this dumb billionaire. And there was virtually no one in the world that gave any care for the fact that this guy got killed, because he was borrowing money from the treasuries and gambling it away and causing whole sections of whole countries to fall apart by his gambling and drinking and carousing. And when he got killed, it still caused a world war. And it would seem to me that a morality clause on him would have nipped that whole world war in the bud and we probably wouldn't be in half the messes that we are today.
That's a very interesting,
analogy.
And I think that does go along with it. It hints at the fact that does America have an aristocracy, even though we do not give a title?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I think a lot of people would say, yes, America mm-hmm. does have an aristocracy, an untouchable moneyed elite, and we don't even know who they are.
That's the scary part about it.
Sure.
You don't know who they are.
Have you all ever interviewed, about 2 years ago, Rachel Maddow was doing a lot of stuff on her show about a group called The Family. And a guy wrote a book about them called, his name is Jeff Charlotte. And The Family is kind of an interesting, a couple of days ago they had the National Day of Prayer. And the National Day of Prayer is sponsored by The Family. But that scandal was also called the E Street Scandal.
Or K Street. Isn't it the K?
There were a whole bunch of congressmen and senators that were caught up. I think it was the Nevada senator that had to resign because of various of his sexual peccadilloes and whatnot. Uh-huh. And there were these other senators that did a cover-up of him. And, well, they were all caught up in this family.
Yeah.
And the E Street building that they were all claiming was a church, basically, and as such, they had a tax write-off. And so they created this National Day of Prayer as this lobbying opportunity. And so they get a tax break to do political work, but they call it a church. And so I noticed, I've been trying to track in reading this book, I noticed that, you know, Missouri, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, and a few other states right around the Midwest are really burdened with a whole bunch of these congressmen and senators. Coburn is one of them. Kansas has got...
Brownback. Brown Roberts.
Yeah, Brownback's a member of them.
Uh-huh. Brownbackistan is what we call Kansas.
Yeah, yeah, and I noticed the other day that this kind of goes along the same lines. You remember a couple of days ago they had the horrible execution, and those guys were in this vicious game, you know, to speed up these executions in order to top out. For a week ago, Missouri executed a guy secretly on Monday night, so Oklahoma decided to double down and kill two guys, and then they when Oklahoma was having trouble getting their executions done. Both the governor and the state legislature were trying to impeach the judges that were stopping these executions. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is the phony religion that is spurring killing people. And so I wonder, you know, you might put that on for a future show, this the way that the Oklahoma legislature and governor have actually kind of gone out of their way to murder someone by abusing the due process and bullying and cajoling the legislature and probably the wardens and all sorts of different people into taking part in an execution. Well, and they're just doing it almost on a dare.
Well, thank you for your call. That certainly has brought up a lot of interesting points, and we have...
Just one quick question. Wait, I was curious, and of course those two males that they executed were black, too, if I recall correctly.
Right. Sure. Yes.
And also, I'm curious as to how you're calling in from San Francisco.
Well, let's see. KKFI got founded based upon the sale of a station in St. Louis back in years and years ago, and... So I've been a big fan of all of the NFCB stations. So, it's the internet streaming and get to listen from afar.
Great. That's excellent. Thank
great.
You
sure,
for calling.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hey, my pleasure. Peace be with us.
Yeah, same to you.
We actually have another caller on the line. Caller, you are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from? Caller, are you there?
Did they give up?
They might have given up. We were having a really good discussion there.
Yeah.
All right.
We'll have to call back. 816-931-5534 if you want to call in. And we do have a caller, and Esther's going to have to leave us pretty shortly here,
About 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah. Well, this has been lively, and the family is an interesting topic to talk about, and it's a funny thing that how I was just thinking about some of the best people you know are so religious, and yet their politics are to the right. And it's like, how can you be, well, I say religious, I mean that you go to church and you love God and you live a good, clean life, you speak kindly and softly, and yet you condone right-wing politics. That just escapes me.
Yeah.
We do have another caller, and she has said that we might not like her opinion, so that's fair warning.
Yeah, that's right.
And caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Well, I'm on a highway right now. My name's Mary. I'm just coming south of Hiawatha.
So,
I was interested in the guy saying that Oklahoma rushed to put an execution out. I worked in a prison. I'm an RN. I worked in a prison for a long time. You can't rush that. People are on death row forever. And the guy that they killed, I believe he murdered, or well, he actually shot somebody and then buried them alive. So, you know, that's kind of a little traumatic death there, you know? So I have a hard time thinking of him as a victim.
Mary? I understand what you're saying, because I, too, am retired from corrections. Matter of fact, I'm retired from Oklahoma. But what I want to say something, though, because we want to be very clear on this. We are in no way excusing capital murder, you know, if a state decides they want to go with the death penalty, whether I agree with it or not, if that's the law. But what I am very offended by, Mary, is the way it was done. And I will just be very vocal, very verbal about the fact that I do not support the death penalty. I work death row. I will never support the death penalty because it's wrong. It's wrong to kill people, to tell folks it's wrong to kill people. And the way they killed that man, it put the warden, the director, and everybody else in a position of having to take all the heat. And I don't know what Governor Farrell or whatever her name is, I don't know how she's going to come down on this, but... I agree with what the director said. They need to go in and they need to stop all the executions. They need to rewrite protocol. They need to do training. They need to do something. But we knew that those drugs were very dangerous. They're drugs that are used to kill animals with, euthanize animals.
Yeah, it stops your heart.
And it didn't, but they couldn't find a vein. And so, and Mary, you're an RN, you know, they went through the groin. You know what that means. They didn't tap it because you can't even see it. You can't feel it. They hit something.
Oh, there's a big old vein right there in the groin. It's called the femoral vein.
Yeah, they didn't hit it.
The femoral artery, it's huge.
They didn't hit it.
That's how they go up to look in your heart, is through the femoral artery.
Yeah,
it's
but they didn't hit it.
Huge artery.
Yeah, they missed it. And so.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah. Then they had some NF people.
Yeah. It's a mess. And I'm empathizing with the director and some of the others down, some of the folks. I know them. They're good people. But they're going to ride some heat on this, Mary, and it's unfair.
Well, I understand, but, you know.
Yeah, well, thanks, Mary, for calling in.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
Oh, sure.
All right,
bye-bye.
And, in fact, I had intended to say that when I first met Esther, it was because I found out about a capital punishment,
yes.
A meeting that you were leading down at the downtown library,
yes.
Many years ago.
Yes.
Because as I learned yesterday, well, we know this, but I was at the Pete Seeger concert last night, sponsored by KKFI, and Mike Murphy has joined us in the studio, and he's going to read something he read last night.
We actually should have another caller on the line.
Oh, okay.
Caller, are you there this time? This is the same caller that we got disconnected from a little while ago, and they called back, and they were once again having to wait in line behind another caller.
Oh, dear. Oh, my.
And I apologize.
Well, and I don't know how much longer we can hold Esther. It is 3:30.
Matter of fact, I'm going to have to go. I really hate to leave. I'm enjoying this.
The caller can call back, 816-931-5534.
Thank you so much for having me. I wish I could stay for the entire program, but I've got a waiting to get
to. I did want to say what I heard last night, that right now there are more black people incarcerated than were enslaved during the days of slavery. That's what stats are showing.
Yes. And we've got to do something about these laws.
And if you want, thank you. And maybe we'll pause for a message here, Amy.
Yeah, let's take a break.
Okay.
And we'll come back and maybe continue the discussion.
I hate to leave, y'all.
Okay.
Provided by the Pitch Weekly's Taste of Kansas City, Thursday, May 22nd at the KC Live Block in the Power and Light District. Featuring Gold Fork competition with six of KC's chefs, plus food samples from over 15 local restaurants, including Couscous Euro Kebab, Hotel Phillips, Colors Macarons, the West Side Local, Pickleman's Gourmet Cafe, and more. Taste of Kansas City benefits Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Greater Kansas City. Further details at pitch.com.
The Pacifica Radio Archives presents two interviews with the legendary Hugh Masekela.
People get more and more aware every year, and a lot of artists of international fame have been involved.
One from 1988, when he was in exile, and one from this past March, on From the Vault, Wednesday morning at 5, right here at 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
And we are back, and we have a caller on the line already.
Yes, can you hear me?
We can.
Well, let me say that, number one, I'm a registered voter. I voted in the last election.
Can you tell us your name and where you're calling from?
My name is Joe, and I'm calling from Midtown, Kansas City.
Hi, Joe.
And I'm sort of concerned about people who, and I have been, I have marched. I'm over 65. I have marched and I have been down to Jefferson City for direct action. But I am concerned if the people who sponsor these bus trips, if they have not checked with people to find out if they are registered voters and if they belong to an organization where they are paid members to fight for equal justice. So someone going down to Jefferson City and who is not a registered voter, who didn't vote in the last election, who did not take two people to vote in the last election, I don't think they should be going on the trip.
Well, Joe, that's very interesting, and you bring up very good points. And I do hope that if there are any people that aren't registered, that they will be told that they should register. And I'm not sure what the registration laws are right now in Missouri. Can you still do a postcard registration?
Well, again, I mean, I don't know if you can do one or not, but the main thing is that I have marched, I have been down to Jefferson City, I have done other things. And the new strategy for most people, progressive, now is voting. So, you know, direct action, marching, going down to Jefferson City without being a paid member in an organization that's fighting for justice, I mean, the two don't go together. You know, a bus ride to Jefferson City doesn't mean too much for those people who down there who can check and find out if you have voted.
Well,
to go down and protest and not be a paid member of an organization or who did not vote and take two people to the poll last year, I think is a crying shame.
Yeah. Well, and let's hope that there won't be any of those people. And I will call Esther because she had to leave the studio and point that out to her and find out if they are planning to register people. I suspect that they are because we know that voting is key to getting the people elected to represent us. But that's a very good point. And to be a dues-paying member of an organization that supports social justice, I wish everyone were. And thanks, Joe, for your comment.
Thanks very much.
And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A very good program.
Thanks. Why am I always surprised when somebody says it's a very good program? I don't know. And now we can, I don't know, Mike's here with us, Mike Murphy, who's also a KKFI volunteer and our chief engineer, and he read something last night at the Pete Seeger sing-along birthday party, because today would be Pete's 95th birthday, and he just died, I believe, in February this year. And Pete Seeger, for those people who may not know, was an activist a long time ago and did a lot to... Mike, why don't you take over here?
Okay, let me start out by saying happy birthday to Pete. That's right, 95 years old today. And... I did see some kind of posting on KKFI's Facebook page. Apparently there's some website called Concert Window where the video of last night's show is posted, and you can watch it tomorrow night or something like that. Again, the show that we did last night, the Pete Seeger tribute at the at Unity Temple on the plaza. So you might want to check out KKFI's Facebook
page. Yeah, there was some great music.
Yeah. So, again, as Sharon said, my name is Mike Murphy, and I was asked to speak about Pete Seeger and the Civil Rights Movement. So, you know, when people say Civil Rights Movement, we tend to think of the 1950s and 1960s. But Pete, despite the advantage his skin tone provided, was ahead of the curve. In February of 1942... Pete sang a song called Dear Mr. President, in which he extolled, "This is the reason that I want to fight, not because everything's perfect or everything's right. No, it's just the opposite. I'm fighting because I want a better America with better laws and better homes and jobs and schools and no more Jim Crow and no more rules. Like, you can't ride on this train because you're a Negro. You can't live here because you're a Jew. You can't work here because you're a union man." This eerily prescient foretelling of America's post-war years set the stage for what was to come, and Pete was certainly up to the fight. So we'll fast forward 15 years, come out the other side of the Joe McCarthy era, and Pete runs into a fellow target of FBI surveillance and intimidation, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., at the Highlander Folk School in Tennessee in 1957. Seeger helped King and other civil rights activists incorporate song into their organizing tactics. It was at Highlander, when they were hunkered down one evening in anticipation of a pending attack from the Ku Klux Klan, that Seeger first sang for King what would become the anthem of the civil rights movement, "We Shall Overcome." Harry Belafonte later said that although the song came out of Dr. King's heritage, he was unfamiliar with it. He did, however, remark that it was just the song the movement needed. As for Pete, he often said that his only contribution to the old Negro spiritual was changing it from first-person singular to a first-person plural point of view. While in one sense just swapping one syllable out for another, in a larger sense, it gave a generation its marching orders. He changed that song from "I Shall Overcome" to "We Shall Overcome." So I mentioned earlier that people often associate the civil rights movement with the 50s and 60s, but folks like Pete Seeger and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. are done a disservice when we think of the civil rights era as a past tense thing. It is a mistake to view the civil rights movement through a black and white lens. And I mean that in every sense of that phrase. New civil rights issues have arisen that weren't really considered back in the day. Nowadays, Muslims and LGBT folks have their civil rights challenged daily. We shall overcome. Women making significantly less than their male counterparts doing the same job. In a country where we've been unsuccessful in getting an Equal Rights Amendment passed. but we shall overcome. Undocumented by the thousands languishing in detention centers, in limbo, but we shall overcome. Now, I mention all these other groups not to suggest by any stretch that we're living in a post-racial society. There is a new Jim Crow in this age of incarceration. As Michelle Alexander points out, there are more black men in prison today in this country than were enslaved in 1850. Adding insult to injury, oppressive voter ID laws serve as a poll tax for the new millennium. But we shall overcome. When inducting Pete into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Harry Belafonte, that's right, I said Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Harry Belafonte said that Pete would get his nomination for the fifth face on Mount Rushmore. Now, as cool as that would be to see, I don't think that would be what Pete would want. I think that Pete Seeger would feel a better remembrance of his legacy would be the use of his songs to inspire further action, or the use of his actions to inspire further song. Maybe we should take one of his songs and transform it to first person plural. What if we had a hammer? In any event, it's clear the best way for us to serve Pete's legacy is to serve humanity, to serve each other. I'm sure Pete wouldn't mind if we stood on his metaphorical shoulders, because for Pete's sake, we shall overcome. Thank you.
Mike, I thought that was brilliant. Now I have to ask you this question. Did you write that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I am so impressed. How about you, Amy?
Yeah, no, I thought that must have been something you got off the internet from some smart person or something.
Oh, man. When I heard that last night, I immediately thought, oh, I've got to ask him to read that. And I think it fits well with our conversation today. And there's so much injustice out there. And
it's hard to know where to start. And this is where it brings back to me that I don't have any problem starting with watching some billionaire lose one small portion of the franchises that he owns because he's a horrible person. I think people should have consequences for the things they say and do, and for him, I'm sure it's a smaller consequence than we all think. I mean, I think a lot of times we think, oh my word, if I owned a sports team and I said something stupid and I lost it, he probably, I mean, I don't know what he owns, but I bet you a sports team is only the tip of the iceberg in what we're seeing. And he was being held accountable. And we have to start somewhere, and that's why I'm not going to complain about that happening to him.
Well, they called him a billionaire. And you just have heard all kinds of things. I've heard that he was going to be fined $5 million, and then I heard $250 million, and I said, oh, my God, that's a little bit overboard, because a billionaire, that's a quarter of his billion. But as it turns out, it looks like a $2.5 million fine, which is nothing to him. But nevertheless, if he's just a billionaire and not a multi-billionaire, his team is worth anywhere from $600,000 to $700,000. So that could be considered $600 million. $600 to $700 million. So that could be 60%.
See, when I hear the term billionaire, I don't assume 1 billion. I assume that could be anywhere from 1 billion to 999 billion.
It could. Yeah, I have no idea. But they didn't say multi-billion.
Because people don't build their wealth on a sports team alone. They were talking about that on another program at one point, that it's kind of a status symbol for people who already made it. It's not where they're making it.
Well, he only paid $12.5 million for it. So he got it cheap.
Oh.
Yeah, he bought it in the early 80s for $12.5 million.
Well, why don't we just put a pool together and buy the Clippers?
Let's do that. Well, I don't know. If we could do it for $12.5 million, we might be able to build a pool a little better than $600 or $700 million. Yeah, that's inflation for you. But, oh, yeah, listen to our federal government, and we don't have inflation. Sorry. Do we have time for some more callers? We do. If anyone else would like to call in, 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534, and add any more comments to today's topic.
Well, I really liked, Mike, how you brought the issue of women's rights into this kind of overarching theme of just freedom in general. And a lot of times you'll hear people talk about how America is freedom. Well, without all of these people being free, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about the women's rights mostly here, but women's rights are never separate from other civil rights movements. All the incarcerated black people are affecting so many women as well. All of the deported Hispanics, there are so many families that are getting split up by that. It's not isolated. Women are kind of universal, not a special interest group like we say.
As 50% of humanity, absolutely, we are universal.
Yeah, absolutely. As a, we all have the right to breathe clean air and expect to drink clean water. And so that's certainly a woman's issue, right? I mean, and certainly electoral politics are a woman's issue, and war and peace and
fair
where
tax
our money's
plans.
Spent. Exactly.
Right. Fair tax plans are women's issues.
Equitable society. Yeah. These are all women's issues, of course.
And that's why what we tried in our statement of purpose, or what we read at the beginning of every show, we try to point out that women are a part of society, and we aren't bound to discussing pap smears and breastfeeding, or, you know, that we're larger than those
mm-hmm.
issues that
mm-hmm.
often get assigned to women's magazines, fashion and you know, breastfeeding, for example. Yeah.
Well, fashion's more acceptable than breastfeeding. I mean, when you get into these stereotypical women's issues, you're still in this hierarchy of acceptable women's issues, and they try to tell you what you can think. And you have to be careful, even when you're coming from this feminist perspective, that you don't belittle the people who want to talk about fashion. And don't become the thought police on the other way. It's such a fine line to walk all the time.
Well, and here we're getting right back to this Clipper owner.
And the thought police.
And the thought police, exactly. He was having a private conversation with his, I'm going to use a sexist term, his bimbo, and see, what can I say? I mean, what would inspire a 30-year-old woman to hang out with an 80-year-old man?
Lots of money. Lots and lots of money.
It's the last thing I can think of at my age that I would want to do. Well, anyway, if we had anyone who wanted to call in and make a comment, another dissenting opinion, 816-931-5534. Lots to talk about. What are we going to do next week, Amy? Do we have a plan?
Do we have a plan?
we wing it frequently. We frequently wing it on this show, and I hope...
Well, you don't know what's going to happen this week.
That's right.
The thing, is that there seems to be this relentless onslaught of just when we think, well, that's the most horrible thing I've ever heard. Next week, we might have something more horrible to talk about, and it doesn't stop.
Yeah, something, and I heard on KKFI on, I don't know which show I was listening to, it might have been one of the early morning talk shows, talking about why we have these rallies, why we go to rallies, that we're preaching to the choir. And I liked what the fellow said, was that we're not preaching to the choir, we're rallying the troops. When we go to Jeff City, it's like, okay, so all these people are like-minded. Are we going to change anybody's opinion? Maybe not. When you go to Jeff City, where they're all bought and paid for, like in Kansas and in our federal government by the corporation, are we going to change those people? Not so much. But when we go, we're giving each other hope that if we continue, we're going to find a path to do the right thing. I mean, we've got to. We've just got to. We shall overcome. Just like, Mike's going to chime in here, I think. No,
I am.
He's not going to chime in.
Well, I think if we're going to overcome in today's media landscape, we need our own reality show. I think somebody needs to follow us around with a camera and just spend a bunch of time acting up so people think it's really cool to be an activist instead of really cool to be in a pageant or really cool to, I don't know what all these people do, party or something. I don't know. I don't think I've ever watched a reality show.
Well, you know, there's so many people who think, for example, both of us are members of the National Organization for Women, and so many people think that we have already won that battle. 80% of the population thinks that the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment, has passed.
Oh, they think all kinds of special things about when they hear this idea of feminism. I mean, sometimes I feel like I need to pull up my pant leg and say, yes, I shaved my legs or something, you know.
Exactly. And the media did such a marvelous job of painting feminists as weirdos and I don't know how radical. I consider myself really radical, but they've done a really good job of smearing it to the point that most women don't want to claim to be a feminist. And I have a friend who says they're femibuts, because if you ask them, are you a feminist, they'll say, well, no, I'm not a feminist, but I believe in equal pay for equal work. No, I'm not a feminist, but I want a husband who helps me equally around the house. And it's like, well, what do you think feminism is if it isn't social equality?
Well, they've convinced them that what feminism is this secret plot to violently overthrow men and put, like, I don't know, mandatory, insert the most horrible woman stereotype you can think of across the entire planet. I don't know what they're thinking, but it's just this generic feeling of evil is going to happen from women. I've been called soulless this year within the
feminist movement
by people who don't understand. I've been called soulless. I've been called a Nazi. I'm not really sure people understand what those words mean.
Sounds like Rush Limbaugh. Are you friends with Rush Limbaugh?
Maybe these people are friends with Rush Limbaugh. Maybe that's where it's coming from, but it's just hilarious. I mean, you'll hear people call you communists and all kinds of things, and that one's my favorite. They'll call you a communist while talking about how we need to sell more of our workforce to China. I'm like, you're the one that sounds like a communist to me, bud.
Yeah, it's amazing, yeah. Well, and we started out, we tried to get a linguist on the show today to talk about where did the beginning of derogatory comments like this old white man made, where did this all begin? I guess it's probably timeless. It's probably been going on forever that you knock somebody else down to build yourself up. Or, in his case, I really do think that he was just exhibiting control. He wanted to show his woman that he was in charge, and he was jealous because she was appearing in pictures with other men who might be black, who might be more attractive than him or might be a threat to him. I think that was pretty much where he was going with that.
When you use words like that, it is a power move.
Uh-huh.
It is trying to consolidate power.
Yeah.
And you are absolutely right that we really don't accept a man trying to exhibit power over another man based on the color of his skin as much as we would accept a man exhibiting power over a woman regardless of skin color.
Absolutely. Well, does this wrap us up today, Amy?
I guess it does. It just seems like such a shame to end this conversation. It's been great with everybody calling in and a wonderful poem. And
yeah, Mike, that was a great piece that you wrote there.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
But I'm sure Donna is going to have a wonderful show with Urban Connections coming up. And guess who's coming to Kansas City after that?